Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a special Tuesday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is December 31st. Andy, how we doing?
Brendan, we're back.
I feel like
this is a major championship week. We're just pumping out dailies.
We will not be doing that. The children interrupted the end of our year in review. So we're going to post the end of that, a little Kapalua preview Tuesday. We're not going to do no show Wednesday, New Year's Day. Hopefully you're, you know, with family or doing something else that's not listening to our voices. And then we will be back Friday. So we'll go Monday, Tuesday, Friday this week. And
this year.
Ideally, we'll wrap up the year in review on this episode, but yeah, we're here at the start of it. Nothing's given.
Stranger things have happened.
I'm home alone with the kids again.
Scary movies.
No, I have called for a vasectomy. Make sure this is, you know, we don't have any repeats of this. I can't be doing this anymore. I'm done having kids. 2020 is going to be big. Getting snipped. But yeah, that was a nightmare on Sunday night as they kept interrupting. All right. Worst things have happened. So let's get into it. We have Kapalua, the Century, Tournament of Champions. Century is like a little insurance outfit in upper Wisconsin, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, they've got a golf course called Century World.
That's like Flowerland, right?
Yeah.
With all the flowers.
Oh, yeah.
But they came in with Kapalua. I forgot, you know, Kapalua was in flux there with title sponsorship. So
yeah,
but they're out.
Genesis bailed for Tiger.
Yeah. And then it had that weird like Korean or Asian.
SBS?
QBE for, no, not QBE. SBS.
SBS. Yeah.
Yeah. QBE is the shootout. All right. So just, I love this event. It's just like a good, you're upset about the date this year, which I totally understand.
I'm not upset, you know, but it does suck.
It does. I like it. January 4th, 5th range. It's kind of a nice handshake to start the year. It's primetime golf. It's on when usually the rest of the country's freezing. I just really like it.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Would this event have done better with like a Monday, Tuesday finish?
This year or just in general?
This year, because they're going to go up against the first round of the playoffs at night.
Well, isn't that kind of always a thing? They tried to do this before. Remember, like a couple of years ago, they pushed it Friday to Monday and had it finish right before the kick of the national championship game. I'm not sure it matters one way or another.
The other, and I just think like also you probably would have gotten a better field if it wasn't right after New Year's.
Yeah.
Although, if I was a pro, you know, spending New Year's in Hawaii would be pretty sweet.
Right.
I mean, I just think we're talking about spending time in.
Yeah. Ideally Sunday, that first NFL game ends at like, or I'm sorry, the NFL games end by like 8 and you get like a few hours in prime time. But I mean, we're not talking about a big audience no matter what, probably. I enjoy it though. Just kind of as a good tone setter, feels like a natural kickoff to the year at this point. The whole fall thing is just, I don't know how you characterize that at this point.
I feel like the fall's now, like, actually everybody plays in the fall because they have to, because it's so far away.
You get some points or what? What do you mean?
Well, it's just like August to January. Like, it's like, I don't know what percentage of the season it encompasses, but it's got to be 30% now. As opposed to like 20.
Maybe.
And that's
yeah.
significant. Rory talks about it. Like not starting the year 180th in the most important standings in the world. It's pretty exciting too. We're going to have the best player of the decade crowned. Shortly after.
What's that mean?
you know, the best player in the 2020s is going to be, we're going to know it after this week. It's going to be a thing to watch all year.
I sense you're kind of actually seriously subscribing to that Rory thought that you need to get some points here before the first of the year.
I mean, kind of.
Kind of. If you care about the FedEx Cup. I think there's tiers here. There's the guys, the rookies. There's the guys who are going to go to Asia and get that kind of money, free points. There's just different tiers, but I think everyone's going to at least dip their toe in the water in the fall now. So
yeah, I think it's really important for the guy, not necessarily the top 10 guys. You know, we talk a lot about it, but like there are guys that the only thing that matters is them winning majors, really, yeah. For the yeah. way we think about it. Like Tiger missed the Tour Championship last year.
Yeah.
Do you worry at all about that?
No,
no, no, me either. Yeah. So
do you think
it's
Jordan
like
Spieth cares about that. Even?
I do.
Yeah, I think he might. He's kind of like on the edge there.
I mean, he wasn't first team all decade, so
that's ridiculous. Okay. What do you like about Kapalua? Are you in on? Do you like this event?
I love Kapalua.
Okay.
It's a great golf course. It got refreshed. They like to use that terminology, but you know.
Oh, is that a thing now? It's not that. That's a category. Refreshed.
Yeah. I mean, you would probably put it in restored. I mean, this was Coren Crenshaw's first real project together.
Right.
And it's definitely one of the golf courses that stands out when you look at the PGA Tour schedule. This year, it should be better than it's ever been. They redid a lot. They redid, I think, every single green. You're going to see a much more defining bunker style. You're going to see that kind of a little bit more jagged edge style, a little more character to them than the bunkers used to have. I think they have a few new tee boxes. I was reading about like the third hole. Guys are hitting 6 irons into it where they used to hit wedges. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's got a ton of uneven lies.
Yeah.
And interesting green complexes, which I think is just an excellent recipe for golf.
Is it still a par 73?
It might be. That's irrelevant. I mean,
the guys go deep here. The winning number is usually in excess of 20 under. Not that it, you know.
So say it was a par 70. I think that would be like a legitimate par for this place.
Okay.
Par 69. I mean, the yardage is so misleading because of how severe the site is. There's so many uphill and downhill holes and the wind.
Would you say this is a good site for a golf course? Bad?
No, it's not a good site.
Right? It's pretty hard that they made a course here, right?
Rocky, lots of big walks between tee boxes. Right. That's like one of the reasons that people always talk about, major at Kapalua. It would be really cool, but
from all the infrastructure and fans and everything else.
Yeah. And like, you know, I guess Erin Hills was this way. It takes like 4.5 hours to walk Erin Hills, regardless if you're the first off or, you know, it takes a long time to get around it. And it's a big walk.
As we mentioned, it's a thinner field from my view here. It's good. It's great, but it's not great. It's fine. But for a 30 to, it usually comes in between like 32 to 38 players. They're really missing some of the big names. And it feels like this event had really had a lot of momentum, a lot of juice in the last 4 or 5 years in terms of this young crop, the whole Spieth class of player, everyone patronizing this event, everyone going there. And this year, Rory not going, Phil and Tiger are kind of always passes, but you're missing 3 of the 4 major championships. We talked about this on Monday's episode. So I think it's a little thinner.
The other thing is
event that like the field doesn't necessarily make it, you know, you want to watch golf and the location, the time and place really make it.
The other thing is 15 first time winners last year.
Right.
So, you know, like,
go ahead.
Run down this list, like Corey Connors, Tyler Duncan, Dylan Fratelli, Lanto. I know he was the best player in the world for a while. I don't want to disrespect him. Homa, Sung Kang, Lashley, Adam Long, Keith Mitchell, Bassi Munoz. you know, JT Poston, Martin Trainer. Like, these guys aren't exactly like, I don't want to disrespect any of them. I like a lot of these guys, but they aren't exactly like head turners. Encompass a third, more than a third of the field.
Well, that's sort of always the case here, right? No, or more than normal.
I don't think opposite field events should get an invite here.
Well, then you're just totally delegitimizing.
I don't think they should exist. Sure. They should be classified as like web.
We need a nickname for Martin Trainer. Who's like a famous trainer? Joey D.
I think we
like
could
that.
Just call him like a famous one hit wonder.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. By the way,
Crisscross.
Is that one hit?
I don't know.
I think they had more than one hit. So you mentioned Basti Munoz. I saw he posted his invite to the Masters. You know, this is they get him around Christmas. I was kind of disappointed his envelope said Sebastian on it. I think Fred Ridley's in there in the office with his, you know, calligraphy pen. He didn't just, I was half expecting him to write Bassie on the envelope. But I guess that one's not catching on in Augusta National.
Yeah.
All right. Who do you think has the longest odds?
Who has the longest odds?
1,000 to 1.
Herman or Trainer?
Trainer. Jim Herman's 500 to 1. And then after that, it's kind of a cluster. So you're on it. Who do you think's the favorite?
Favorite has to be DJ.
John Rahm, 4 to 1.
Oh, that's it.
Rahm hasn't had like a bad event since, I want to say, August. He had the one where I think he emceed at the Dunhill playing with his dad. And it's just this total outlier. And everything else, he's finished in the top 5 or 1, whether it's on European Tour or wherever. Rahm's kind of on a tear right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just kind of broken up in different tours and different months. So
this is if he wins here, be a good precursor to the Masters. Lots of uneven lies.
Well, yeah, we hear Jordan Spieth talk about that all the time, right?
He's yeah,
like, this is like great practice for Augusta National in terms of why he succeeded at this event often is because of the more the feel of an uneven lie, whereas maybe some of the more robotic players sort of can short circuit the ones who, you know, play via TrackMan numbers only and flat and soft.
Maybe ones that struggle with clubs that aren't drivers.
Yeah, gets a little dicey. Should we do quick one and done picks? Are we going to do that this year?
I think so.
All right. Well,
I'm going to try and get a league set up for next week.
Okay. All right.
I've got a lot on my plate this week.
This
week was not a good one to start.
this January 2nd start again. This really popped up on us.
We want to create a format where you can jump in and one of the things I struggle with one and done's is especially before this is I would you know forget to make picks. So I want to make a league where, you know, if you got a lot of stuff going on and you missed 2 weeks, that's okay. You're not completely out of it, right? We won't have maybe like a weekly thing or a monthly, like a weekly contest, a monthly contest, and an annual one running congruently.
Okay.
I don't know.
Congruent or concurrent?
I don't know.
We got to save room for Champions Tour fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we could slot in Champions Tour stuff on given weeks.
Okay, let's do one and done picks for this week.
Who are you going with?
I mean, I think we're starting off with player of the decade. Like you said, number one FedEx Cup standings are soon to be. I'm going with Brendan Todd.
Oh, Todd watch.
Maybe the best player in the world right now, minus John Rahm, who I'll save for maybe a. Are we going by money winning? Are we going by earnings, winnings?
I don't know. I think that makes the most sense.
So this league may not get off the ground very far, but we're debating it here on December 30th. Okay, I'm going to go with Brendan Todd. I think he's playing well. This is one of those events where, you know, there's no cut. Everybody's going to make a little bit of cash. But I don't know what the strategy. Maybe the better strategy is to go with the big name who's beating only needs to beat a handful of guys. So I'll go with Bitad, one of the best players in the world right now. He's 40-1 with Matt Kuchar and Cameron Champ. Who do you like?
I've got a hunch that the CT machines aren't making it to Kapalua. So I'm going to go with Xander. And he won last year, obviously. That's finished second at the Masters.
Yep.
And I just think he wants that title of I'm the best player of the 2020s. He wants to just snag it right from the beginning and hold on to it.
Are we going to get any fun like marketing campaigns? You know how last year we got some launch of a bunch of different new, you know, I think this is we got started to get bubbles of the season of championships, biggest events. I can't wait to see what they have this year. I remember just having a field day with the first round last year. It's some new graphics and these new, you know, refreshes of what kind of propaganda we're going to be spoon fed this year. Start to show their heads, show their face. Okay. You got Xander. I got Brendan Todd. And anything else on Kapalua?
No, that's about it right now.
All right. Let's do an ad
read. We'll do like predictions on Friday for 2020.
Yeah, we're going to talk more holistically about the year on Friday. Now we just need to get through this godforsaken year interview. All right, let's do a little ad read. Journeyman.
Are you excited for New Year's? Big drinking holiday.
I mean, I'm just trying to get across the finish line here. I don't know if excitement's the word, but it is. It's generally, I'm at the point where I'm kind of pretty stuffed, and this is actually blends well. I've had too many Christmas ales, too many beers, too much like tenderloin, potato. Like I need to throttle down at this point, and maybe that's where Journeyman comes in. It's just a little less filling.
A little brown sauce, just a little more efficient.
A little more efficient. A little more, you know, bang for my buck there in terms of feeling less bloated. So is that our official recommendation? Load up on Journeyman for New Year's Eve, New Year's Day?
Of course it's our recommendation.
All right. Journeyman.com/shotguns.
Journeymandistillery.com.
You know, you think after the 300 minutes of ad reads we've done this month for them, I'd have the URL right, but I guess I don't. Journeyman Distillery, Journeyman, M-A-N, singular, as we've discussed, distillery.com/shotgunstart. There you will find our picks. I have the Silver Cross whiskey. You have the Featherbone, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, the Featherbone. The Featherbone bourbon.
So they have bourbon, whiskey, gin, vodka. The Spirit Finder is on that landing page, so you can quickly find out where to procure these New Year's aids, these New Year's celebratory spirits.
I don't know if they're aids, they're maybe essentials.
Yeah, that could be right. So
it's the end of the decade too. It's like a special New Year's.
Is it?
I mean, kind of.
I saw someone made the point that, you know, the guy that designs those dopey glasses that everyone wears in Times Square.
Oh yeah.
He had the easiest job ever this year. 2020. He's got two O's. You know, like that guy is just didn't need to show up for work this year.
You know who's doing NBC's New Year's hosting?
hey. Is that your impersonation?
Our favorite golf podcaster.
That's my impression of Andy's impression of Carson Daly. A secondhand impression of Carson. I didn't know that. He's doing NBC, huh? Everybody does. Isn't ABC don't have the big one? Is that Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve? Anyways, I'm out on New Year's Eve. If you want to get Journeyman for that, I won't stop you. My official recommendation for this week is to get it and sip it Thursday and Friday night while watching Kapalua. I think this is the perfect pairing with late night primetime golf while you're sitting in your chilly home somewhere in the continental United States, maybe with the fire. And that's my, whatever it is, bourbon, whiskey, that's my recommendation. New Year's Eve is the most overrated holiday of the year.
And sign up for that thing, the free pass to Welter's Folly.
That thing.
We're going to have something sweet, I think. So we're just waiting for details, you know?
I think the audience is as well. There's a lot of people waiting for details.
Hey.
Okay.
You know, yeah, building suspense, building interest.
We're working on it.
Telling anything about it.
I promise you we will deliver something from this. We are forging ahead on this year in review, even though it's, you know, threatened both our health and wellness and family lives. But it will get done. So sign up for that. It's not a mailing list, as I often refer to it. But
it gets you a free pass to this awesome putting green. I actually was looking through old pictures from the last decade the other day, and I found some. And I actually, it was from the year in review. I was looking through old tweets, and I was trying to find the JB Holmes video, and I stumbled across the Mrs. and I's trip to Journeyman. And
maybe I'll
recook those.
Okay, yeah, reheat those. All right, let's get off journeymandistillery.com/shotgunstart and move back to the year in review. So let's get back to the Open Championship, which we started last episode, part five, before we were rudely interrupted by my children. We talked about Phil sort of being anti-fig jam, not into the results, and he's not even trying to win right now. He's only there because he loves the Open. Let's do a little bit more kind of pre-tournament, pre-championship goings on. So the big things here, dejected Phil. Brooksy talking about how he doesn't practice. Did we hit that last time? I don't know. Maybe we did. He just practice. When you see me is when I'm practicing, which was a sort of a bombshell of a quote.
He doesn't practice for regular events.
John Rahm bristling, getting mad about Thomas Peters tweeting jokes about his Wimbledon outfit. You remember that Wimbledon Bond villain type getup?
The sunglasses and the little tie, right?
It's really it was a cocktail, really, of someone that kind of grew up in the Basques and then spent 4 years at Arizona State. Kind of that's the outfit you end up with. That's what comes out. So this became like a big topic.
He looked like a murderer.
Maybe he is. This became a big topic. He was this one Scottish, I think, reporter was pushing him on. It was like, was this the only shirt you had ironed? Is it the only one you had? Just kind of, I don't know, intentionally or unintentionally insulting the outfit.
Van Royen got really pushed about his outfit choices too.
That sounds vaguely familiar. But I mean, Rahm is mad. He's like, I'm not mad, bro. But very clearly upset by the whole thing becoming a story. He's like, you know, I will tell you, it was not what I had originally planned, but for reasons I won't disclose, as if it was some, you know, big drama. That's what I had to wear. I will say I got, you know, great compliments in the royal box. So quite sensitive while trying to not be sensitive, and said, you know, I'm not going to look for Thomas Peters after he says something like that. So I enjoyed the Wimbledon outfit controversy.
Loved that outfit. That outfit was one of the more underrated moments of the year.
So you got Brooksy practice, Rahm's outfit, Phil dejected.
You know what it is about those moments like that?
It's
like not everybody, I feel like not everybody's confident to have like an opinion like on the internet about the way somebody plays a hole, right? Or, you know, their play down the stretch. Like they aren't confident having an opinion about the way Tiger plays golf or whatever it may be. But everybody's confident about teeing up a take about somebody's outfit. You know, like everybody on the internet feels like they know enough to have like a very strong opinion about stuff like that or slow play. Like that's one of the things that happens. And that's, those are the best moments when everybody just has a take.
So I tweeted the clip of the Rahm thing on Sunday night, which I highly recommend you watch. It's just a great exchange of Rahm trying to keep his cool, which he's not always great at. So we had that. We had Rahm. We had Phil. We had Brooksy. Tiger talking about passing his driver test.
He was one of the 26.
And another one that really wet your whistle was Justin Rose, the defending, the reigning FedEx Cup champion.
He talked about the schedule.
The schedule. That's correct. The schedule. It just what added to the kind of the juiciness here is that he was the reigning FedEx Cup champion, talking about how he felt like everything was moved around just for FedEx. And this quote was, the majors should be protected, and that they weren't. And he talked about the difficulty of you develop this pace of your body really peaking and your mind peaking for these four events and have over the course of career. And that was thrown off, he felt like.
My favorite part was, that's how all of our careers ultimately are going to be measured. 30, 40 years ago, there wasn't a FedEx Cup. So if you're trying to compare one career to another career, Jack versus Tiger, it's the majors that are, they're the benchmarks. For them to be tweaked so much, I think it's quite interesting at this point. You know, ironically, Rose, one of my first team all decade members.
That's true.
He's got an accomplishment that, he's got two accomplishments that most players didn't have the opportunity to get.
What's that?
A FedEx Cup.
FedEx, yeah.
And an Olympic gold medal.
That's true.
But
that is true.
But like Rose is a perfect example. He could win four PGA Tour events next year and literally does nothing. Absolutely nothing to the way I think about him. If he wins one major,
and whether
this is fair or not, I don't think a player does anything for me with him.
Okay.
He's been number one in the world. He won a U.S. Open. He's been essentially a fixture at the Masters every year, except for last year, for an entire decade. You know, he's been one of the best major championship performers. And I think, like, from my standpoint, if he wins another major, he makes a big leap in terms of, like, where he would settle in. Like,
all right. Yeah, no, I mean, he's wanted some primo places, but only one of them was hosting a major at the time. Okay. I don't want to get into Rose's career.
Marty sleeps on technology.
What do you say on technology?
Golf should be a game of skill. It should not be a technology-driven game. And where that balances depends on how good you are. That's still my gut view. The data will guide us. Distance Insight Report.
Which they committed to releasing in the fall, but I don't think that came out, right? I think that got bumped again.
What's been pushed more, Shotgun Start merchandise or or the Distance Report?
The Jazzy J.
Or Troy Merritt and Jazzy J. We did Troy Merritt.
Kind of did Troy Merritt, yeah, truncated version. Okay, elsewhere, we also have Alan Shipnuck relaying this tweet. I remember this was a big tweet at the start of the week. Heard a good story from a Euro Tour gadfly. Ricky bounds into the locker room at Royal Portrush and spies Tiger scrolling on his phone. What do you think of the course? Fowler asks. Tiger, without looking up, it's for men, not boys. Which is, I think on Twitter at the time, we took as like an indirect shot at Ricky, calling him a boy, more or less. But I think it was just Tiger speaking generally about the course. But it was fun to...
It definitely was true about the course.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was awesome course.
Another fun one. What did you make of Portrush? Well, it sounds like we'll be back there in the next decade.
Yeah,
right?
This is one of my favorite major venues.
Should be added to the Rota. And speaking of the course, another thing that everyone enjoyed pre-tournament was the discovery, I believe, by the golf.com boys, maybe Luke, Dylan, the drop zone at 18. Remember that? The gnarly kind of junk.
Oh,
18.
Yeah.
So
for the grand
the guard against the backboarding. Yeah. Epidemic.
Imagine that. You miss long of a green and you're in a bad spot.
And your relief is some horrible cabbage. So, all right. Should we get to the actual championship?
Yeah, I think we can move on.
All right. Thursday, we start with Darren Clark just ripping through heaters. Just ripping through a pack of smokes. And he had one. It was before 7 a.m. local time. It was like 6:30. And he's just lighting them up. Clark actually played all right there.
Yeah,
the
he played really
Remember?
Well.
He missed the cut, I think, with a triple on his last hole, his 36th hole. And I remember he stormed off, didn't talk to anybody, had to release a statement on like Saturday.
You know what he did? He striped it right down the middle, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
The out of bounds.
You know what?
Everybody was going nuts. Just if Rory doesn't hit a ball out of bounds, nobody talks about that out of bounds.
Can we talk about another course thing from pre-tournament? Someone, you remember, you got intel from somebody working, I think the par three is at the 16th.
Yeah.
That's a marsh, like a volunteer.
Oh, Bryson.
Yeah.
Yes. He hit like 15 shots or something. He said it was impossible.
He hit 17 shots into one hole before finally proclaiming the hole impossible. Not possible. It's an impossible hole. That was good.
And meanwhile on Sunday, Sunday, flash forward, Shane Lowry's hitting a shot and picking up the tee about a split second after he hits the shot.
I think it was 16, right?
Yeah, it was 16. It was definitely 16.
I love the image of Bryson in a practice round just continually hitting tee shots and then just saying it's impossible before walking off. All right, back to Thursday. The OB on both sides of the first fairway was kind of a... remember Shackelford was more or less, I don't know that he used the term disgrace, but did not approve of it. It was an old rule. It went back to like the foundings of the club, right? When they didn't own the land necessarily. And it had just always been that way. So they were playing it that way. And the big thing was Rory pumped one OB left. I watched him on the practice round on Wednesday, pump one OB right. And on first round, he tugs one hard left. Quickly dives out of bounds. Didn't exactly make up for it. You know, he then took an unplayable lie later on the second ball and made a quad, right? Quad eight. His tournament was over. His shot at winning was over. Not his shot at making the cut, but I think his shot at winning was over 15 minutes into it.
Yeah.
And golf week.
Well, maybe. If he goes out in 2027. If he shoots that course record. Everybody was talking about the course record.
They were? I don't remember that.
How he shot the course record at...
Oh, yeah, 61. When yeah.
If he shoots 61 tomorrow.
Right.
If he does this, you know, course record round, it's...
Yeah, you're fine. Golf Week tweeted the pun, Horroriable. I remember I got really angry about that because everything was Rory this first day. JB Holmes topped one on that same hole, the 16th. Do you remember this?
And the first day
he bailed out to the walkway.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Maybe it was the second day.
I remember that shot because he was leading.
JB was the first round leader
and the second round leader.
Tied for second round. Co-lead. No.
JB was in it until Sunday.
Rory was 8 over, T150th. Tiger was 7 over.
And David Duval played better than Tiger on Thursday.
David Duval shot a 91.
91. He played better.
You had this crackpot.
He made a 14.
Duval, I'm not going to read it, but like the paragraph rolling of that 14. Where he hit the wrong ball, he hit several OB, then played the wrong ball.
He lost his first two balls from the tee, then played the wrong ball for his third ball,
So he had to go back and play like a new... It was a paragraph-long explanation of how his card got changed from a 13 to a 14. Played better with the 91 than Tiger. Tiger, I don't think, had his first birdie until the 15th hole.
Two things can be true. One player can shoot a better score than another, but the other player could play better than the other.
Yeah.
If you watched each of them play, David Duval played a better round. He was more in it than Tiger ever was.
I do remember Tiger just barely being competitive. It just didn't seem like he wanted to be there, could be there, needed to be there. And I don't think he made a birdie until the 15th hole, and he was T146 or whatever it was.
Looking back now, because of the knee thing, the knee surgery, and how he's played after, it's like he was in pain. He looked like he was in a lot of pain, and it turns out he probably was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Duval was 2 under through 4. Let's remember that.
And then he had that big thing. It's like, you do this as a professional athlete. You show up, you put your score down, you come back and you play. And then I think Josh Burho or somebody on golf.com was like, he's WD'd from the last two opens after posting big number. I don't know. Whatever. You remember the holograms, the DJ walk, like the Sky Sports or Golf Channel, one of those, did the hologram thing. And DJ was like, just get out your yardage book and pretend you're looking at it. And he like can't find it in his pocket. One of the more amusing moments of all major championships for me. Brandel said the word is choking to describe Rory's, work, not only at the Open, but at the majors versus other events. He was nuanced about it. He wasn't hot takey, but I think this was Thursday. Do you remember Paul Casey wanting to fight a fan?
No.
He was like, something happened.
Pretty even keeled guy.
Right. Somebody was talking shit from outside the ropes, and Casey like made a putt and did this sort of thing, like come at me, bro, type move. I remember that. That was a thing. Bobby McIntyre.
The Kyle Stanley IV thing.
Yeah.
Got into it.
Confronted him. You got to yell IV, man.
I got the quote.
All right.
It hit Greg's mom. So I told him. So I told him how it was. I said I wasn't happy. And he didn't really like my response. He's the only one I've seen do that. It was straight into the crowd. It was into the crowd from the word go. And we're expecting him to shout IV. She's all right, I think. But that's not what you want.
That's true. That's not what you want.
Bobby McIntyre gained a big fan here.
And then I remember the Europress like trying to shame Kyle Stanley out of Ireland, basically. So you're not sorry? Are you going to say you're sorry? These questions were really aggressive. And Stanley's like, no, I'm not sorry. This is not like Stanley disputed the facts and said everyone yelled IV, but except him.
Do you remember the Brooksy Tiger text gate?
Oh yeah, that was the dumbest thing ever.
Brooks wasn't returning Tiger's texts.
Because what Tiger wanted to talk to Ricky Elliott about this course intel, is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
I saw that many times over in the course of my research and deliberately ignored it.
It was catnip.
Yeah, it was. Anything else from the early rounds Thursday?
Yes.
Okay.
And Friday, too.
Friday, okay.
Spieth through two rounds has hit 35% of his fairways and is only three shots off the lead.
Holy cow.
Meanwhile, Brooks is talking about how no one's hit it better and I've made no putts. And it was like the juxtaposition of these two guys.
Yep.
And where they were. Like, Brooks can't shoot bad numbers in majors because he hits it so good.
Yep.
And Spieth is like just trying to keep the ball in where he can hit the second shot.
Smoke and mirrors.
Duct tape. I called it duct tape.
Yeah, that's right. Koepka said no one's hit the ball better after Lowry had posted to Saturday 63. I believe he said that. One of the best rounds of the year. One of the best rounds ever in a major. Brooksy 63, I think it was opening round at Bethpage that we talked about.
Yeah.
And Lowry's 63 is Saturday at Portrush. Two rounds.
What was it? Back 9:30 for Lowry? He birdied six of his last 10.
Yeah. It was that was quite a run. But
Friday.
Spieth, I totally forgot. He went birdie, birdie, eagle, birdie to get to six under through eight holes on Friday morning.
Yeah.
And he was briefly tied for the lead with Holmes. I don't remember that at all. You remember him being on a share of the lead?
Well, it's hard to remember because it wasn't like they were iconic shots. They were like hold 40 footers and, hitting out of the gorse to 10 feet. It's just, I read something I wrote about this, and it's like when he's on.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget he finished second in strokes gained off the tee 1 year.
Right. Right.
I mean, he finished first in strokes gained approach like a couple times. Yep. And he's finished first in putting. Like, he is. I don't know what's happened. right. you know, but right. he's arguably one of the best at every single facet of the game when he's on.
Right.
Right.
And it's just so unbelievable that for 2 years he hasn't been able to hit a ball.
But he's still he's on a co-lead of the major championship on Friday.
It's because of how ridiculously good he is at everything else. It's an unfathomable thing that's happened. I remember this week was when it really crystallized, like how absurd his golf game is right now.
I'll say this. It's kind of unbelievable how much he's been a constant topic of this year in review because of this very point you're making. Like, we're always checking in on it.
It's just, we haven't seen anything really like this. Where the game's like, he was the preeminent superstar.
He's healthy, as far as we know. You know, it's not an injury-related thing. And he's just out of the picture.
He's just not very good.
Yeah. What else happened? You got Friday stuff?
Xander shoots 65. And little do we know what's about to
let's do the driver thing as its own.
Westy's T3rd in a post round presser. He says, "I literally don't care."
He said that this week?
Yeah, he said it again.
Oh, yeah, I missed that. How about Tiger on the subject of apathy? I just want to go home after he finishes. Because it's just the way it is. It's just the way it's going to be. These guys are too good. There are too many guys that are playing well, and I'm just not one of them. I just want to go home. Which these quotes are kind of amazing given how the year ended, with Tiger honestly looking like the best player in the world at Royal Melbourne in Japan. You know, it's just like, it's just the way it's going to be. These guys are too good. You honestly felt like maybe he was done, right? Like, he won his Masters and he was done trying this out, you know. I love that Westy quote. All right, any other Friday things or Saturday?
So we're doing driver as its own thing.
Let's do that after. Let's do that after we get through the whole championship.
So Saturday, you want to go to Saturday?
Yeah, I don't have much for Saturday.
So Westy birdies 3 of the first 4. No.
You're surges. Losing your mind. Losing it.
I mean, and then, you know, just to show what kind of character he is. In all this world, think back to the WGC Mexico, the drops, you know. He hits it in a bush, and he could have gotten an embedded ball rule. And the guy takes the penalty. He takes the unplayable, right. and the guy's like, he said he probably could have gotten the drop, but he wouldn't have played it from there in the first place. It was an unplayable, and it just was like a breath of fresh air in a world where everybody – you know, especially now watching what happened with Reed, Kuchar with his drops, his second rulings, his
moving
bullshit.
The sand.
Yeah, it's
moving
like
the sand. Guys trying to take crazy stances. You know, yeah.
And right. Here's Westy, just like in the thick of a major championship, like plays by the rules the way the rules are supposed to be played by. He could have taken advantage of the rules, but he knew that he would have been taking advantage of the rules. And then he was playing Sunday without a rain jacket, which was all-time theater with Helen on the back.
his girlfriend, fiance, yeah. Girlfriend, Helen.
Obviously, Lowry's back 9:30.
Yeah. Yeah. That was – it happened so fast, too, for my money. It was just like all of a sudden the day was over and he was up, I think, 4.
Yeah, and everybody was in it. There were so many people in it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden nobody was in it.
Right. 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 Okay. Should we hit Sunday? Do you have any other Saturday thoughts?
The Brooks quote, which we talked about. I don't think anyone in the fields hit it better than me. I've just probably putted the worst in the entire field.
He was like getting visibly frustrated for Brooks relative to Brooks, who's deadpan all the time. I remember him like kind of flabbergasted, incredulous, is like another putt burned the edge.
Well, if he thought he was frustrated on Saturday, enter Sunday. And is pairing with the pace car.
JB, not ready to hit, and then debating on what to hit off the first tee. And then
Azinger.
and then hits an OB. He has to reload.
Is this the start of a epically disastrous day for JB?
Shoots 87. He goes from third to T67 with an 87. And the score was probably only half the embarrassment, as Brooksy kind of shamed him with the fake watch, looking at the fake watch and an official. The quotes afterwards saying, you know, JB's just never ready to play. And it's not just him. It wasn't as bad. His quotes weren't as mean as we thought they could get, but.
Azinger on the broadcast, on the telecast.
On the first tee issue?
He's had to know what he's going to hit off this tee for at least 23 hours. And he still took his time pulling that club.
And Azinger is like a JB supporter based off the Valhalla Ryder Cup stuff. You know, he's generally kinder to him.
This round might have ruined JB. You know, usually like if a guy's playing in the Masters, like right. playing well in a major.
Yeah.
He's, you know, on top of his game. So after the major, he finishes 54th in the no cut St. Jude, which I think 63 players were in. He finishes T52nd at the Northern Trust, T65 at BMW, and then missed the cut at the Greenbrier and withdrew at Nine Bridges. This could be a ruiner for him.
The fake watch thing with Brooks, and then the one, that clip of him just walking off the green with Holmes plumb bobbing in the background. That became like as much a part of Sunday as Lowry's win. Other things, Ricky hits an OB on the one, but only because it bounces off an official that's in play. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He hits some official walking inside the ropes.
Yeah.
And then it hits off the guy and then bounces OB. And someone, and this is right after the McIntyre stuff, someone notes that Ricky didn't shout four. So maybe he shouted four, the official wouldn't have been hit. So that was... Ricky was kind of pissed about that, if I recall.
Everybody wants somebody to track down Lowry, and he gets off to a very, very shaky start, and Fleetwood right. flagged it on one. And Fleetwood okay. three-putted.
Oh, yeah.
From like 6 feet, and Lowry made like a 10-footer for par.
Right.
And that was, it was just like, okay, that was, you always look back at moments and rounds, and that was a moment where Fleetwood had the opportunity to possibly get two shots back on Lowry, and it would have been like a real golf tournament. Westy got hot off the gate, out of the gates too, but we saw, I think he missed like four putts inside of 4 feet.
I remember Azinger saying at one point, that's what a yip looks like.
Yeah, it was really hard.
Westy kind of went back to his roots.
He's got to go to a long putter.
The arm lock?
I don't know, something. I mean, maybe he has too much honor to go to the long putter.
One thing we did neglect to mention, tee times moved up. Not significantly, but like an hour, 2 hours, because we just expected it to get nasty. It never, I mean, it was bad in stretches. You had the Westie, and you know, giving his umbrella to Helen and all that.
The average score, you're talking about the weather wasn't that bad. I mean, it got horrible on the back nine.
I know.
The average score of the final six groups, do you know what it was?
No.
75.41.
Okay, maybe it was bad.
That's what gets lost, because like you're not going to remember Lowry playing like outstanding golf in terms of like a 65. But he played utterly amazing given the weather. And the circumstances. Right. He shot 72. It was a great, great round of golf.
While we're on Lowry, I thought he was super kind of endearing. Just talking about Saturday night, talking about Sunday. Really one of the better, more candid moments. He's like, I kept talking about his caddy. I kept on telling him how nervous I was, how scared I was, and how much I didn't want to mess it up. I didn't know. This was really cool. I didn't know if I was good enough to win. And he talks about going for a walk on Sunday morning. He talks about the choke at Oakmont, sort of blowing up at Oakmont when he was, I think, in the final group, maybe penultimate.
Yeah, he was final group with DJ.
and kind of ejected from that. It was just interesting. He talks about being at Carnoustie when he had fired his caddy in middle of the round, and golf that wasn't my friend. I didn't like golf. And here we are a year later saying he doesn't know if he's good enough to win, and he just puts together a Saturday and Sunday that's for the ages.
He had a great quote too after Saturday about how he was going to go to the pub and have a few.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to sleep well.
Yeah. He's so nervous. You know what else I loved? That he immediately WD'd from Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the putt on 18 was like barely in the hole. He's like, I'm not, I won't be there.
It was amazing. He was a, you know, not to jump ahead, but, you know, yeah. he was a past champion of that event. That first time event.
We'll get that.
I loved the quote from the John Hagen article from Cowan. Who,
yeah, I have that here.
Golf Ireland hired Cowan to come out. Basically, it was just to tell him that Rory was really special.
Yeah.
And Cowan says, Rory's going to be great. But there's another good one out there. The little fat lad with the glasses. talking about Shane Lowry.
When they're whatever, 12 years old or something like that, 13. That was a great post. I think this was just everyone, the winner that, maybe not the biggest name, but a winner that everybody loved and appreciated.
Mm-hmm. It won't go down as like one of the greatest major of the decade or, you know, but it was in terms of like the feel goodness of it. It's going to always be overshadowed by Tiger's return win, but in many ways you could make the argument that this was a better, more heartwarming win.
One thing we forgot to mention was Rory breaking down, crying, tearful Friday night after making his run with Steve Sands and with Sky Sports. You know, it was awesome. All these people are here for me and they want me to do well. You know, that was like another thing when we're talking about the juxtaposition of Lowry being the one to win it. Rory talking about how he kind of felt he didn't know what he meant to those people, and then he did. So
it was, he showed a lot of character.
All right, should we then get to
One last thing? Kyle Porter had the Memphis tweet this week, which was insane.
Got ratioed into the center of the earth. There's columnists writing articles about him at the Memphis paper. It's going on Memphis radio.
But he
it was a point about TPC in attack versus Port Rush, not Memphis writ large.
But then there was also the score to par tweet, which was great. Score to par at the 2019 majors for those who made all four cuts. Koepka, minus 36. Xander, minus 14. DJ, minus 14. Cantley, minus 12. Webb, minus 9. Molinari, minus 9. Kuchar, minus 8. Fowler, 7. Fitzy, minus 3. Spieth, minus 2. Oostie, minus 1. Stenson, even. Fleetwood, plus 3. Wise, plus 3. Hatton, plus 5. Cam Smith, plus 20.
Tiger not in the tweet because he missed the cut at PGA. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, Koepka is 22 shots clear at the majors of the next guy. Now, keep this in mind because he wins next week and everybody says it's a done deal. This is the one of the greatest major seasons of all time. He wins two other times and he doesn't win player of the year. This statistic alone should guarantee you player of the year, even if he didn't win any of the majors. Advanced analytics, like the real golf tournaments of the year, the real ones that actually matter to the superstars, right. He dismantles everybody and doesn't win player of the year.
Yeah. Yep. It is kind of... You walk out of Port Rush thinking, okay, that's it. That's one of the great major championship seasons of all time. And he's the player of the year. And then, I don't know, there's still time to do things, as we'll get to momentarily. All right,
time to whatever. I'm done.
Maybe the most far-flung, or I'm sorry, not far-flung, most far-reaching impact from the week, at least here on the Shotgun Start, is the driver testing scandal, right? I mean, I think this is something that should have impacts, more impacts long-term on the game than anything else that happened this week. So a handful of players failed driver testing. No one really knows about it until Xander Schauffele, for reasons that are really only he knows, maybe just kind of feels like it's being whispered about, whispered on, just decides to pop off about it in a press conference. Pissed off. It's an unsettling topic. I've been called a cheater by my fellow opponents. It's all joking, but when someone yells cheater in front of 200 people, to me, it's not going to go down very well. So the RNA, you know, he goes back at it again. The RNA, they pissed me off because they attempted to ruin my image by not keeping this matter private. To be clear, we don't know who leaked it. It could have been maybe an equipment rep, could have been, I don't know. Did we know that the RNA leaked that? I think at the end he said,
that's the thing. He kind of uncovered this without anybody.
Right. There was no need to make this a thing. They pissed me off.
But let me tell you, there was a need to make this a thing because this is long. I mean, the fact that I just still can't believe how little of a small of a story this is.
We talked about this 100 times more on the, but yeah, it should be a massive scandal.
It just shows what happens when equipment manufacturers are major sponsors of almost every other media outlet, how little gets out.
Yeah. So this is me coming out and treating them the exact same way other drivers failed. I'll just say it. I'm pretty sure a PXG driver failed and a TaylorMade driver failed and the Callaway driver failed. This matter should be private.
Note, a PXG driver did not fail, but a player wearing a PXG hat might have failed.
While hitting a different brand driver. But Bob Parsons, this prompts Bob Parsons to come out.
I love this quote. Kaboom!
We do make a hot driver. That said, the PXG driver that was selected for testing, this time tested right on the line. A denial, but not really a denial. We do make a hot driver.
This is the PXG driver, which players are painting drivers to try and get out of using.
Yeah.
And signing deals where they don't have to play the driver.
So I think it's just, this is whatever. We don't need to get into the topic again. It's a year in review. We talked about it regularly. Anything specific from this week that you want to get into? I just think like the longer impacts are that this should not be happening only 1 week a year when the RNA decides to put these guys under the wringer a little bit. And even then they're gentle about it. And this was 2 years in a row. You know, at Carnoustie, Rory's complaining that he feels TaylorMade was unfairly singled out for these random tests. And then this year we have players failing, Xander deciding to make it public, talking about how he failed.
And Xander was a TaylorMade staffer.
Right.
Last year, this time.
Yeah, but not it was a Callaway driver at Portrush. And you know, then we have pushback from the companies saying, you know, that the RNA's machine was messed up and these machines are, you know, punch out different readings based on whether it's an equipment truck, whether it's, you know, the RNA guy setting up to test it. We get the whole.
Let's not rehash takes, but let's keep in mind that whose scale is more likely to be skewed.
Right. Right.
An equipment truck where they're like, yep, conforming. Or, you know, who has more to gain? Or the governing body?
All right. Our positions on this are very well understood, but it's insane that the tour is not interested in this technology being uniform and being ever-present.
You know what? Who had a great, who had the best player take, maybe, of any of them?
Who's that?
Bryson. I found this. I don't think we talked about this.
Well, we got to give Bryson his due then. What did he say?
So he thought that at every tournament, the top five should be tested. Regardless of how you feel about that, he's like immediately after the round, they should be. So he goes, if you did play a driver that was illegal, you take some FedEx Cup points away. So you make your money and win. That's great. But you lose half the points you made. It's not like you should have the trophy taken away. That's one way to deal with it. You putted well, you chipped well, but I think there needs to be some repercussions for using something that's not under the conformance rules. If they want to challenge the ruling, they can go do some tests to see if it truly was over. But, like, at least he was the first player that was like, the player should, there should be some repercussions. Every player stood in the line of, oh, that's not our job to know if our clubs or our equipment is conforming.
Yeah, no, it is your job. That's what you're holding in your hands.
Literally, you have very few fucking jobs as a tour pro. You play golf. And one of the things you should be responsible for is your equipment.
So I guess, do we see any, does anyone besides the RNA do this year? Allegedly the PGA Tour is doing it, but it seems.
Yeah, because there are some people popped at, but nothing same big. It's just.
Yeah, I would love to see kind of really put people under the, but they're so worried about the players hating them right now, you know?
I think the only way this becomes a real thing is from the gambling population.
Right.
That's the only, and I think sport, I read something that sports gambling is going to be the craze in 2020 because all these states that are legalizing it
of course.
At the start of the year. Yep. But that's the only way, because as a gambler, you want it to be a fair field.
Yeah.
You can't have guys cheating when millions of dollars are at stake. And even more money is at stake in the PGA Tour. You've signed a fucking code of conduct about for these players about, you know, doing like fantasy golf leagues.
Right.
Like these guys can't be in fantasy golf leagues as tour pros. They violate the code of conduct, but they can use a fucking illegal driver. It's absolutely insane and ass backwards the way the tour approaches, and the equipment companies and players that could be cheating. You know, Patrick Reed illuminates this even more. Kuchar with the damn picking out stones and Slugger's comments. All of these things just pile up into like a tour that clearly does not have any respect for the rules of the game and the spirit of competition.
So here's. So, yes, put all that stuff aside. Here's the big takeaway from this week, and it's thanks to Xander. Like, the big stick here is negative PR. Patrick Reed's name is dirt right now. Xander decides to go public with it. I think, like, if you're going to make this a major stick, like, just keeping it all in the dark, even the RNA, you know, they weren't going to release these names. Xander sort of offered it. I think, like, you can't just keep it this backroom stuff, right? You can't just keep it totally hidden, and or else the guy's just going to go back to, you know, no one knows that I did that. That's not enough of a deterrent. There has to be some public shame here, and that's why this story blew up at the Open, because it did go public.
Yeah.
Accurate? Okay.
I agree.
Let's move on. Are we done with the Open? No, go ahead.
Every other sports organization is very open because there is a checks and balance that we've talked. I've said this before on this pod, but the lack of owners in golf, the lack of there being real checks and balances leads to this hush hush tour where, you know, you get Robert Garrigus suspended for 3 months for smoking weed. Yeah. And Patrick Reed openly cheats and is rewarded with a, you know, a private flight to the President's Cup and the tour making web say unjustifiably.
Yeah, that was not heckle. A proud moment, especially.
Yeah, and fans not allowed to heckle. But whatever.
Okay,
let's move on.
All right, let's do WGC week. I'll jump in with Barracuda real quick, and then we'll do Memphis.
The Cuda.
So this was a back-to-back with Barbasol. It was basically like everyone just got on the flight in Kentucky, just the charter jet straight to Barracuda. Say we don't need to run through the opposite field kind of dregs, which is done. This is the last one where really
allegedly
without total reform. But, you know, we've seen Bermuda, we've seen some of these fields.
Allegedly.
John Daly gets his golf cart, of course. Morikawa wins. You were and rightly so. I think we had some misgivings about Stableford being at such a prime time in the year when these guys are trying to get inside the 125. It's a little odd to throw them a curveball and decide, tell them, you know, you really need to play a different style and a different format, right?
And this, yeah, this is all with the schedule reshuffling.
Yeah. Troy Merritt held the 54-hole lead before Morikawa finished. Morikawa and Doc Redman, you know, were competing on special temporary memberships. Morikawa finished with 47 points for a 3-point victory over Merritt. What did he do? Merritt had to kind of chip in, but on the 18th to try and tie him and missed it. This was not a surprising win given the way Morikawa played all summer. But this gets him his membership.
Yeah.
Full membership.
So now what else? Two of the three are in.
Mark Wilson was DQ'd for final round for an improper greens book.
I remember that.
I don't know. He said it fit in his yardage book. He had no idea. DQ'd himself.
And Mark Wilson called the penalty as a flashback Friday from earlier.
Yeah. Yep.
At the Honda, I think.
Yep. Other news from this week, Adair Manor announced as the Ryder Cup host, which, you know, that just reheated all the takes about total underwhelming European tour.
Cash rules everything around me. I'm sure the conditioning will be fantastic, though.
It's just Euro Tour is, you know, all these Celtic Manor, Glen Eagles, Adair Manor.
You know, the thing with the team events is, and we, you know, is it doesn't matter. The course doesn't matter for team events because it's, but then we just saw at Royal Melbourne what a great course does.
It just amplifies the event tenfold.
Yeah.
Whether the match is, yeah. Okay. Don't need to get into it. Lexi on the Evian. You remember this is the week of the Evian?
Yes, I had this the next week, but
really being quite sketchy and scruffy. You know, posts to Instagram. I'm actually very thankful I don't have to put myself through that for another 2 days. And she takes a lot of blowback. The conditioning wasn't great. Jin Young Ko wins Evian. Stacey Lewis complains about 6-hour rounds there.
You know, you remember what happened with Lexi though on Monday. Sunday, right?
Women's Open champion practice rounds.
Yeah, you know,
because her bags get caught, or she—I don't know what happened.
So she her left
bag
her.
Got caught.
She left her passport in the bag, and the truck was taking it all the way to from Evian to England. England for the AIG.
Yeah,
the Women's Open, and she ordered the person taking everybody's golf clubs to stop and turn around.
Not everybody's, but like 30 women who couldn't play practice rounds
and come back. And because of the delay, the truck didn't get there until like Monday night. So all these players that had bags there, because Lexi left the passport in, you know,
it was a rough stretch for Lexi between the complaining about the conditioning, which she took. There was a lot of blowback for that. It's like, where do I begin, Evian? I'm thankful I don't have to put myself through that for another 2 days. What else? Spieth adds the Wyndham real late, just kind of searching. Tom Watson retires from both Opens, U.S. Open and the Senior Open, and waves goodbye at Lytham. And this is where all the top players in the Schwab standings skip the Senior Open. Allegedly, we hear a tip that Rocco's media complains that it's too expensive for these guys. Meanwhile, they have like weeks off before and after every major. They like kind of really cushion them. They give them 2 weeks to get over there, like they're taking the boat. I remember we were pretty amused by that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's
all right,
playing
that's
for millions of dollars.
McCarron, they all skipped it.
One side note: Harry Higgs, future podcast guest.
Yeah.
Won on the web this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
podcast a couple weeks later.
Yeah, so appeared on the podcast. That's, what, a month later.
That's what I got for Barracuda and other extraneous notes on Watson and
WGC Texas. Memphis.
All right, let's
go to the Swamp Pass Invitational. We go
the TPC Initech Swamp Pass Invitational.
Port Rush to Swamp Pass.
Tiger no shows. Tiger, Lowry, no show.
Ricky Molinari, also no show. 63 players in the field.
Wow, 63.
Yeah. The Tour Partners announces a partnership with DraftKings this week. The most amazing thing was that the Wyndham Championship just utterly gets screwed over. The Wyndham Rewards, which they pump all this money into, you know, they big time sponsorship for the Wyndham Top 10 end of year. Like the when it got announced, this is what the rhetoric said. The Wyndham Championship plays a pivotal role in the regular season as it's the last chance players have to secure a spot in the FedEx Cup playoffs. In joining with the PGA Tour to introduce the Wyndham Rewards Top 10, we're not only elevating the significance of our own tournament, but also placing a premium on great golf all season long. What's more, as the world's most generous rewards program, we couldn't think of a more fitting way to recognize the PGA Tour's best of the best than by saying, you've earned this. So, you know, the point of it was to get big names to win the Wyndham to win this prize pot.
Yep.
You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars at first, and hundreds of thousands for, and that's going to bring all these big names to Sedgefield.
So then we get the commit list on Friday. Everybody's got a Friday in Memphis. You get the field list. And how many in the top 10 from Wyndham Rewards?
One player, Paul Casey, only one. So all this, the Wyndham Rewards comes down to WGC, FedEx, Initech.
And no one, Sedgefield just kind of gets shafted again.
Despite putting up these millions of dollars.
Right.
Huge partnership. They get none of the big names.
Okay. What else happened, Memphis?
Brooks wins.
Dominates. I remember this just being so sleepy. Everyone's like, we got Brooks, we got Rory, final group. This is going to be awesome. And I just remember it being so boring. And I honestly, coming on the backs of Sunday at Firestone the preceding year, it seems like the courses don't help, but it seems like a real WGC problem, just a total lack of juice late in the season on these no cut.
Do you remember that Cavs Warriors series where every game was a blowout?
No, I've banished it from my memory.
But like every game, whether the Cavs won or the Warriors won, was like a 20-point game. There was no close games. That's kind of how the Brooks Rory showdowns at each of the Tour Championship and the WGC went. It's like Brooks came out of the gate hot, and Rory was just flat as shit and got smoked here. And then at the Tour Championship, the reverse happened. The big drama was that Brooks showed up for his tee time, his final group with Rory at a WGC. So he shows up at 12:15, 12:13.
This was not a story. I remember us like, this was people just wanted to like, oh my God, look, Brooks like just doesn't give a shit. And we are often cheerleaders for that whole narrative that like he uses everything else as practice and he doesn't care about the non-majors. But like, it wasn't that big a deal, right? He got there plenty of time, did his warm up. The reaction to it was bothered. So, what else? And they vaporized Rory.
Yeah, So he was like, I don't know what he was basically, I don't know what the big deal was. I, you know, pretty much that's my warm-up routine, you know? What else happened?
There some Xander?
Like, yeah, it's with a drop.
Backboarding? Ridiculous backboarding?
It's absurd backboard, gets this really generous drop, and everybody goes nuts.
He, like, hit it over the... He hit it over the grandstands, like into some woods, I think, in an attempt to backboard gone awry. And the announcers are like, well, it's one of the perks of playing on the PGA Tour.
Yes.
You have these backboards.
I forgot to put that in there.
A week after getting popped for the illegal driver, people are yelling at Xander.
I had Xander drop, like I was going to remember that.
The revealing quote was the broadcast. It's like one of the perks of playing on the PGA Tour is you have these backboards.
You know what also came out this week?
What?
A video of Sergio throwing a club at the Open at his caddy.
Oh, that's right.
Which turned out to be his brother.
Yeah.
So everybody goes absolutely apeshit about this. You know?
Right, right.
But a rough year with everything.
Yeah.
And then, sure enough, he goes absolutely nuts on a tee box at St. Jude. Just takes a big chunk out of the tee box. And at this point, everybody's like, you got to suspend him.
Yeah. It's every week now. But he's so mature. He's found happiness, peace. He's got his major. He's a dad now.
And think about this. This is, you got a guy that gets suspended for 3 months for smoking weed. And this guy, every single week, is making just acting like a complete idiot. If you were in the NBA acting like this, like, remember when J.R. Smith was tying guys' sneakers together?
Yeah, he got
suspended.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Sergio should have get suspended when there's just a series of things. Like, it's like, you know what, buddy? It's time to take a break. Like, why would he ever change if he never gets suspended?
Right, right. All right, what else you got? Anything else from Memphis?
That's all I got.
I went on vacation that week. Everybody was just kind of trying to wind down from the major season, and you got a WGC.
Oh, Matt Bass was the one that tweeted that Xander drop.
Oh, okay.
Stuff.
All right. All right. Yeah, I remember it being a big controversy.
All right,
what's next? We got Wyndham. I think you ended up with Wyndham.
I did end up with Wyndham.
We could never, maybe I should have gone Barracuda after this, but whatever. That we screwed up the back and forth is pretty much, you know, in line with the.
I think I have. I've got the first playoff event. No, you do.
I did it also though. we had a very clear list that we couldn't follow. So go ahead.
All right. So JT Poston wins. Played bogey free for the entire 72 holes.
Oh, I do not remember that at all.
He's the
first guys I don't remember, like Fratilli, Poston. I had no recollection of. Go ahead.
So he's the first player to win without a bogey since Lee Trevino in 1974.
Holy cow! Wow.
Kind of underrated win, just because Poston's like, he's a good story in the sense that he was under recruited his whole life, never thought to be great. And, you know, he's never lost his card. He's been really a good player on the PGA Tour. And at 20, I think he's 26. Like he's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. If he's got like a Swedish pancake career, I wouldn't be surprised.
Swedish pancake. Where'd he go? Like Furman or something? One of those,
Western like Carolina.
Okay. All right.
He won I think he won the state championship twice or something, but didn't get any scholarship offers till really late, but he had already committed there. Hovland falls short of his card by 2 shots.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
So this is when everybody's going nuts about us, most notably about the US Open and how he should have gotten points for US Open, cost him his card. He's got to go to web finals. Nobody was worried about him getting through Corn Ferry finals. But
when did the Hovland rule come out?
Next week.
Okay.
So next week the Hovland rule comes out. So he falls short by 2 shots. Richie Wierenski, perpetual bubble boy, finished 126. And he birdied 3 of his last 6 holes, 2 points short. Jason Day and Stevie Bootcamp. Stevie Bootcamp is no more. Gone. Jason Day and Stevie Williams break up this week.
Travelers, he's talking about looking to 2020. They're long-range plans together.
Yeah.
First of August, they're done.
So we had the Lexi passport thing, drama at the beginning of the week. We had none of the senior tour players showing up at the Open.
You know what? Now that you talk about Richie Wierenski being 126, do you have Patton Gazire in there this week?
Oh, I didn't. That he was mad.
Talk about these hard luck guys that miss their card and have to go to finals. Patton Gazire is mad that he gets in the 125 because he wanted a few weeks off from the FedEx Cup.
To get ready for the fall.
Fall events, Mr. October. This was the origin of those ridiculous quotes. Meanwhile, he's got a 2-year exemption from winning, and these other guys, you know, have to listen to him talk about being mad he got in the 125.
So ridiculous, you know.
All right.
Let's see. So Thunder Bear had a tough week this week. This is when he peed in the aisle on the plane and abused some passengers. Really, really a rough week for
pled not guilty to sexual assault, among other things. He eventually pled not. What was it? Sexual assault. I don't remember what it was.
Garrett Rank won the Western Am this week as a mid am.
Okay.
Which was unreal. You know, anytime a mid am, like a 30-year-old, wins against a bunch of college kids today is unbelievable. Shibuno Fever wins the AIG Women's, the Japanese sensation, 20-year-old. Had never played on the LPGA, never played outside of Japan, and she wins the Women's British Open. And people just fell in love with it. She was laughing, giggling. Yeah. She, like, her last putt, she, like, slammed in the back of the cup. It, like, popped up and dropped in. Everybody loved Shibuno.
What was the course, the Woodlands course?
Woburn. It was just a disaster.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's see. Spieth. Spieth goes 64, 67. He's making putts left and right. And then Harry Higgs, we were recording with him. He predicted an eagle in the second or the first round in his 64. It happened while we were recording. And then he shoots 77 on the week.
MDF.
MDF. Right? Yeah. From in the hunt to MDF.
Is this the last MDF in the history of the PGA Tour?
Yes.
Right? Because they get away with, don't do away with it.
The Fincham rule.
I remember that. So Spieth adds Wyndham as like just to get some more points, try to make the tour championship, get in position, plays pretty well first 2 days, and then just, you know, completely MDF. 77?
It was another smoke and mirrors.
Wasn't this one where you like, didn't he miss like a 5-iron, like 60
three iron? Yeah. Okay. He hit a 3-iron 80 yards left of the green. 80 yards left. And then later in the round, he hit a drive like 65 yards right. It's the perfect summation of what's wrong. He's got a big two-way miss going. And nobody plays good with big two-way miss, even if you putt at an extraordinary, unsustainable level. He had the best putting year of his career, and he didn't win. He didn't even make the tour championship, and he had the best putting year of his career.
Yep.
Like, think about that.
All right. On to the playoffs? Or you got any other wins?
Oh, one other thing. Rory just, I guess that's Monday of.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
Okay,
got
I'll let you do that.
That's fine. I mean, if you want to go for it.
No, you go.
All right. So we're on to the playoffs. And I'd say this was the most eventful week of the playoffs. It was the moment
unbelievable
that consumed the rest of the month of August, I would say. Probably PGA Tour was hoping it would not. But Northern Trust.
TPC Statue of Liberty.
TPC Lady Liberty. What's amazing to me is like the golf was just completely underwhelming. Don't remember much. Don't remember any shots. Don't remember, you know. Pat Reed beat Abe Anser by a shot, and it was kind of Reed's that whole second late summer resurgence after, you know, fooling around with David Ledbetter in the spring. Troy Merritt shoots a 62 in the first round, in the ugliest outfit of the year, in my opinion. Hideous outfit.
I remember that outfit.
In the first round, it was just is rain soaked, and there were no fans until after 10 a.m., which just really had you. Delightful.
I loved that. Tiger was playing with no fans.
Tiger WDs with an oblique issue. And this came like after a week, you know, in the pro-am, he, you know, didn't hit a full shot on the back nine of a pro-am. You know, he shrugged it off as being like, this is a new normal. You know, some days are good, some days are bad. And he had a shaky warm up. And so he like barely plays the pro-am, then WDs with an oblique issue. And we're just like, why is he playing the Northern Trust? You know, like what is this a Chase for 82 thing? Is this why does he need to do this? You know, especially given how things looked at Portrush, and then he's got, it just felt so short-sighted. Spieth, his quote on playing with Matthew Wolff, he said, "I love how aggressively he plays. It's cool. I definitely know I used to play a little bit more that way. I kind of need to get back into that." And this came right after Harry Higgs told us awesome stories of playing with him at like Trinity Forest, and where Spieth would try shots that like a lot of other pros that they're playing money games with, like, just wouldn't attempt. And it was just fascinating to hear after some of those Higgs stories, you know, Spieth talk about, "Hey, I used to do that, and it was fun to watch Matt Wolff do that." It's interesting the scar tissue you accumulate, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it changes you a little bit over time.
It's like, I mean, once you see the big misses that Spieth's been going, like, it's always in the back of your mind.
Right.
And as soon as the thing is, you can be swinging really great, and as soon as one of them creeps back in, and it could be a complete, like, fluky, it's not like the what you were back then, but as soon as one happens, you just, like, immediately, it's that idea that, like, losses and bad shots stick with you way longer than good shots.
Right. Everyone tweets, like, these tee time graphics at the same time. You know, it's just like the automated PGA Tour tweet. It just looked like the most inorganic, you know, awful stuff. And they're like supposed to look like they're going in the octagon or something.
I think they need to like get a few graphic designs and like say, like, "Hey, if we're going to have these guys tweet it out, why don't we like make each one unique?"
Like, are people that excited? Like, "Troy Merritt, 10:45 off number 10. You know, here's like... I don't know what the audience is. What else? Webb Simpson cracks his driver. This is like the dumbest rule ever. Like, you can replace your driver if the grip falls off or like the head falls off, but if it's cracked, you can't. I remember that eliminated some bad rule. Then you had the Wyndham top 10 gathering at the top of the year. Just really one of the highlights of the year. You know, Matt Kuchar's talking about how Rory reminded me, you know, he nipped me by 2 points. And it cost me, you know, it just passed me for, I guess, second in Wyndham Rewards. Rory pops him with, and we all know how much money matters to you. Just really kind of a redeeming moment for Rory after the Portrush stuff, in my opinion. Or after Memphis, I should say. I tweeted the clip. I think it's like the most, you know, biggest punch landed of the year. All right.
Just then unbelievable.
So you want to get to the pace of play?
We never hear the top. Like, one of the things with golf is like in basketball, we get these like beefs, you know?
Yeah.
Golf, we never get beefs between two big name players. And we never hear anybody like take, you know, throw a punch, like, you know, your Browns receivers are, you know, in the comments of Marcus Peters getting signed, you know,
that's right.
And and, you know, talking shit about Marcus Peters, the, you know, a Pro Bowl cornerback. It's like, nobody, this never happens in golf, and Rory just gave Kuchar a left hook right in front of everybody. It was great.
Okay, let's, and then
it'd be a right hook. A left hook would be a jab. Left, it would be a jab.
The Bryson videos kind of explode, and this is all we'll remember the Northern Trust for this year. I would argue this is what the entire month of August became about, given that pace of play was constant topic, constant discussion topic. And Eric Patterson had a video on Friday of
the Bryson timer came out
walking off a 70-yard shot that took over 3 minutes for him to hit. Then Saturday morning, the Bryson putting video really explodes with JT looking at his watch, Fleetwood shaking his head, broadcasters kind of getting on him like, wow, after all that, you know, he takes another look and he misses a putt. The video currently has 2.67 million views. I think, I don't remember what the time was. It was what, 2.5 minutes, almost 3 minutes for a putt that was 10 feet, something like that. And he misses it pretty significantly. This video, as I said, it's got almost pushing 3 million views, but more of it was the reaction both from, you know, Twitter people who don't matter, and then a lot of pros who are on Twitter as well. It's colleagues that kind of had the bigger impact. JT tweets the clock emoji. You know, Fleetwood gives a comment that like taking too much time is sort of against the rules. You had, what else do I have? Eddie Pepperell.
Yeah, this was a great one.
Call them an unaffected, single-minded twit. Luke Donald pointed out the laugh that Bryson still missed the putt by a wide margin. Mark Calcavecchia said there needs to be official trailing Bryson with a stopwatch, giving him times. Paul Lowry says, he could not believe there are people defending Bryson. Ian Poulter makes just a general reference saying players that continually disrespect their fellow pros and continue to break the rules without a conscience, without using Bryson's name specifically. Roberto Castro.
This is the best one.
Tour pro who, obviously has a Georgia Tech industrial engineering degree. It's pretty direct about the specific Bryson process of this putt and in general, his process. All the quote physicist and quote, his caddy needs to be an aerospace engineer stuff is an insult to actual physicists and aerospace engineers. They can do actual math and engineering. Anyone with two eyes and or two feet can read an 8-footer. So again, there was much, much, much more blowback.
Christina Kim had a good one.
Oh, she went crazy. Yeah, she ripped him.
More respect to Justin Thomas for sticking it out and waiting for the putt to fall, which JT replied, it was hard to with a clock emoji.
That was the clock emoji. So again, this wasn't just people getting angry on Twitter. It was a lot of players objecting this entire process. Now, we have the reaction. Bryson's reaction was pretty amazing. Oh, one thing I got to say. Bryson kind of put his head in the sand initially and tweeted out his highlight video while all this is just boiling on Twitter. It's like, oh, nice day out there here. My highlights, good couple up and downs. The ratio at this moment in December is 814 replies, 11 retweets, and 489 likes. So he got ratioed into the center of the earth by just tweeting highlights while everyone was screaming about his process and pace of play. You got any other stuff you want to add to it before we get into his reaction?
Let's go to the reaction.
Okay. He goes on this long monologue, right? And he talks about how it's walking. It's the caddies. He blames the caddies are not walking fast enough. The best was walking fast enough. The best was the transcript question. Are you aware? And Bryson cuts it off. Let's talk about slow play. I'll introduce this and talk about it. And then talks about it at length for 5 to 7 minute rambling answer. Do you want to get into the answer? What amused you?
I mean, everything amused.
He throws Stevie Williams on the under the bus.
Yeah. I mean,
play that round, guys. Stevie Williams. I played with him at WGC. A lot of it's the caddies. A lot of it's the other players. You might want to go check that out because we were on their tail every single hole playing with Jason Day and Stevie. So, it's a rambling answer that I don't know that I want to get into rambling even more about.
It was peak Bryson because of just the lack of self-awareness in the whole thing. Like, it's just...
He called it an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Felt he was being unfairly portrayed when, it's just a video with the stopwatch, right?
Exactly.
Called it an attack, blames the caddies, talks about a four-person job. He talks about, I hate playing golf. I absolutely hate it. I love competition. His response was just not particularly cogent, I would say. The best, my favorite bit of input out of this entire explosion of a controversy was his response to an Instagram comment.
Oh, God.
Where he added on the end of it, but yeah, in general, everyone needs to speed up. Carts would be nice. That might be my favorite moment of the entire thing.
The thing is,
Bryson arguing for carts to improve pace of play.
I've timed him. The problem isn't at all walking speed when his caddy gets there. It takes him 2 fucking minutes to hit a ball.
All right. So he has his initial reactions. It's just exploding.
More Brandel Brooks stuff.
Yeah, I've got that. We'll do that at the end. But Bryson, so then Bryson, for whatever reasons, think Brooks is talking shit about him again. We have the infamous...
Brooks and Rory were talking about slow play in the beginning of this week.
As was Tiger, too. So here's the infamous Eamon Lynch tweet. Was standing on the putting green with Koepka's caddy when an irritated Bryson walked up and told him to tell his boss to make any comment about slow play, quote, to my face. Brooks arrived soon after, got the message, and ambled over for a chat with the scientist. And this just... I think Ken Hideki Wynn or Lou Brown, one of those guys said, this is the zenith of golf Twitter. This is the peak. You have Bryson, constant subject. Slow play, a constant subject. Brooks, constant subject. All kind of pulling together and potential confrontation.
I've seen some conspiracy theories floated out there that this interaction is why Bryson's bulking up.
Wow.
Because everybody talked about how Brooks would just if they got in a fight, just murder him. And maybe this is why Bryson's bulking up, so that he can intimidate Brooks.
And Koepka goes, everyone out here is a little more afraid of confrontation than in other sports, doing his usual other sports thing. He said, you know, it was fine.
It's
wasn't
so true,
deal.
Though.
He goes, it was fine. It wasn't a big deal. Whereas Bryson's reaction, like, it was fantastic. I absolutely loved talking to him. It was great. We got it out of the way. Absolutely
Bryson
fantastic interaction.
Bryson played really bad the rest of the week, right?
Yeah.
As I remember. But he played very quickly.
So, Brooks Brandel on the somehow Brandel takes the point that the rudest players you ever play with are not slow, and they're showing an image of like Brooks walking way ahead of Rory or his drive being ahead of Rory and kind of in the frame off to the side. They may be annoying, but they are not rude. The rudest players you ever play with are the fast players. You're Bryson DeChambeau. If I hit it past somebody, I'm not going to go up and get in front of him, but fast players will do that. And I can promise you it's not the proper etiquette. And they showed this Brooks ahead of Rory or somebody else. I think it was Rory.
Yeah, it was Rory.
While he narrated this, and Brooks tweets, don't worry, I wasn't in the way, Chambly Brandel. If it was you playing, I would never stand there. Since it's Rory, I felt pretty confident he wouldn't shank it. So just like another wrinkle this whole week just... Or I guess it was 24 hours almost. Explosion. Golf actually, I think, probably became the forefront of the entire sports world. And so this dovetails into the PGA Tour finally. You know, so much of the stuff we talk about, whether it's driver testing, whether it's even something as innocuous as Spieth and Reed doing a hug, you know, they have to paint it as sunshine and rainbows, right? And this is the member tour. Even them, this was so red hot. They acknowledge it, which is, you know, you have this ultimate prize branding. This is their first playoff event, and they're getting into this new, this is the ultimate prize. This is our new schedule. And this is we're in New York. It's a big deal. And nothing matters except for pace of play. So the PGA Tour tweets out, we are exploring adjustments to our current pace of play policy. And they do it, I think that's Sunday, with an article that was odd. Not odd, but odd for PGAtour.com. It, you know, quoted Justin Thomas's critiques. It quoted Bryson DeChambeau's defenses. It was just an acknowledgement from the PGA Tour that, hey, you know, it's not, I guess that looking at something that in a less sanitized way than we're used to is all I'd say, which again is the whole point of this explosion, this controversy. Their entire playoffs, in my opinion, were consumed by the pace of play. And quite honestly, the ability of golf Twitter to affect change, being there with the camera, with the phones. So,
yeah.
All right. You got anything else for Northern Trust?
No, that's it. Patrick Reed right. won.
That's right. Beat Abe Answer, which no one remembers. Again, that's my point. No one really remembers the golf from this week. So,
So we're on to BMW.
Chicago, Medina.
This was a tough week for Medina and championship golf.
High rough.
The old standard for championship golf. Just an all out assault on Medina. JT shoots a 61 on Saturday. He just boat raced the field. 3-shot win. I mean, so in the first round, 67 of the 69 players in the field shot under par on one of the courses long considered one of the most difficult golf courses in the world. Adam Scott and Tiger both spoke out after round one. Yeah. Scott said, "They haven't figured out yet that long means nothing to us. You can't build it long enough. I'm not surprised to see low scores at Medina. If a golf course is soft, we are just going to tear it apart. And I'm not challenging PGA Tour officials and course designers to build longer courses. I'm challenging them to build smarter courses. If you require us to shape tee shots to get in play, we're going to struggle. Now we just can play straight. Everything is straight. While there is an option to go over trees and over bunkers, it's just relentless." Scott also, and this was from an Evan Priest article, warned that superstar drivers may no longer stand out, such as Norman or Davis Love III. "The driver is the most forgiving club in the bag now. It's just swing as hard as you can and get down there far. It's not a skillful part of the game anymore, and it's really unfair for some guys who are great drivers of the golf ball. I don't think their talents are showing up as much as they should." So,
yeah. I mean, it was really kind of a, I don't know, denouement of this whole, with the players really joining. Like, this isn't the way to test the best players in the world anymore.
Tiger talked about how guys just swing hard and pray to get hot, you know, and they don't have to play well ever. It's, you know, just play well a couple weeks a year, you know, knowing that that's going to happen. The Hideki shot 263s.
Oh, that's right.
The course record got broken like three times this week.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So Hideki shoots 263s and doesn't win. On the Euro Tour, Gavin Green was leading in the first round, and they asked, like, why he played so well. He said, "I don't know. I've been eating and sleeping a lot lately."
That's right. I loved that. That's fun.
Before the tournament, Bryson promised to help find a solution for slow play.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of this talk. Right?
And Pepperell was forced to apologize. Said he was sorry for calling Bryson a twit. BMW re-signs out of the blue.
Yeah, yep, that was kind of a totally unexpected in the back room behind the scenes.
And Euro Tour steps in into the slow play ring, announces their policy. This might have been Monday of the.
For next week. Yeah. Well, wasn't this also the one where the hotel caught on fire and Phil's talking about?
Yes.
You have to run to the Medina or something and change in the parking lot.
They weren't sure if he was going to get out there and play.
Gosh, that's right. The big thing though was JT going blitzing.
And then the juxtaposition was unbelievable because the USAM was on. Andy Ogletree won that.
That's right.
John Augenstein. But they're playing Pinehurst, where you're seeing these guys just like have to be so unbelievably precise. Like if they hit it too close to the green, they're screwed. Very Royal Melbourne-esque, where like you're seeing guys have to think and. All the skills in the game matter. And meanwhile, like at Medina in the FedEx Cup playoffs, you're seeing just the most boring style of golf in the world where guys are just bashing it. The course is soft. It rained a ton. You know, they got a great superintendent over there, but like it rained a ton and really setups out of the course's hands. But, you know, this old style of golf where long and narrow, when it was persimmon heads and ballata balls, was really hard because it was hard to hit the ball far and straight. And now everybody hits the ball far. And when you hit it as far as these guys do, you have wedges and the rough doesn't matter. Came just all into focus this week.
Yep.
And
yep.
I think it'll be actually, this was a monumental week on everybody in golf's understanding of what is really hard for tour pros.
Yep. Yeah. That's good. Even for like the most stubborn kind of stuck in the mud type voices, when you see allegedly like this Medina, which is supposed to be a kind of a massacre type course for the old way, old guard, being defanged.
I saw it, Shackelford had this on his website. It was of like the, it was the 41st easiest golf course on tour this year.
God. Wow.
Think All about right. that.
Tour championship,
adjusted leaderboard, JT.
JT rolls in at 10 under par, starts the week. We've been banging the drum about the shadow leaderboard, low gross, low net for months at this point. There's like fake, you know, parody Twitter accounts, like the super secret ghost leaderboard, OWG, our ghost leaderboard starts following up. Just a great week for that. So, I mean, everybody's talking about that at the beginning of the year. Rory's big thing was, here are his quotes. He's, I think, third starting of the week. If the FedEx Cup really wants to have this legacy in the game, like some of these other championships do, is people starting the tournament on different numbers the best way to do it? One of the things that I've talked about over the past couple of years is I don't think money needs to be front and center, because I don't think that's what fans care about. Players might care about it, and we want to be rewarded and paid for what we do. But at the same time, competitively, it's not about that. It's about trying to win golf tournaments. So he's really kind of making the points of like, if the FedEx Cup wants to be more or less the season of championships thing, where, you know, it sort of caps 4 months of straight of majors, then like starting at different points doesn't really,
it doesn't really make it a championship.
Yeah. So obviously this was the big discussion at the start of the week. Patrick Cantlay called it hokey. I think Cantlay was second, actually. Cantlay was second at the time. I think it's hokey. It's weird to have a format no one has ever seen, and it's a shame we lose the tour championship. I haven't gone through it. No one has. I'm going to reserve final judgment until I've gone through it through the week. I think Rory said something he'd like let you know on Monday if he thought it really worked. What else happened? Thunder Bear pleads not guilty this week. Brooksy, this is after they have the whole get together, right? The PGA Tour releases this unbylined article that I noted, and it's acknowledging, you know, the Bryson homemade videos. They defended Bryce. They included critical quotes, and Brooksy has that meeting. In his press conference, he goes, I think you'll see some urgency to play faster. It doesn't matter how quick you walk. It doesn't matter how quick you do anything. So just really acknowledging the whole walk faster thing, saying, calling Bryson out without calling it, you know, saying his name. And this came just a couple of weeks after Bryson said, you know, take my name out of your mouth. Brooksy does it without saying his name. Doesn't matter how fast you walk. Euro Tour releases its 4-point plan to curb slow play. And this, for me, in my reading of it, was like sort of a twist of the knife during the PGA Tour's biggest week, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's their tour championship. Everybody's fired up. And here's Keith Pelly coming in.
One last.
With his 4-point plan to, you know, curb slow play while it's kind of consuming the PGA Tour's entire playoffs. They did it, I think, in my opinion. Monahan has to have a press conference that week. I felt like it was time. They could have waited till Wentworth, but in my opinion, they did it to sort of put the knife to the PGA Tour. So Brooksy's immediate reaction to the Euro Tour's plan is perfect. We should adopt it. Doesn't matter how quick you walk. Doesn't matter how quick you do anything. We need penalties. I don't think we need to go into the 4-point plan, right? It's like actual revolution. It's like it's real change.
It's a real change, and it's public.
Yeah,
which is the most important part.
Brooksy's nude photos come out for the body issue. Matt Kuchar is dancing to Tootsie Roll on stage. You know that they have that FedEx Cup party in downtown Atlanta. Outkast is played for it. Perform. Matt Kuchar is dancing enthusiastically to Tootsie Roll. Matt Kuchar with the nude photos with the Brooksy body issue stuff gets kind of twisted up in knots. Quote, here's the question. Have you seen Brooks's photos, the body issue? No. If you want to see nude Brooks Koepka photos, they're out there. Kuchar. Oh, thank you. Like he and Tiger share similarities there? No, Matt, not illegal leaked nudes. This was... So here's... No, they're artfully done. Oh, no, not that kind of... Yeah, we're referring to ESPN the magazine. Oh, I thought you were really telling me. I wanted to see that. All right, maybe next time. I don't understand any of that. So he kind of throws Tiger under the bus unintentionally. 6 people were injured from a lightning strike.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Horrible on Saturday night. The twosome, like this is like price of play is probably top of mind. You have a 30-man field. You know, the guys in last were coming in under 3 hours by the weekend in twosomes, you know, playing in like 250, 255. Koepka played really poor all week.
Horrible.
He just wasn't playing well. But somehow, you know, he was there in the final group on Sunday. After the championship, he goes, it was one of those days where even on the range, I didn't feel very comfortable with the driver. Iron play was okay. Just the driver, it wasn't fading enough. Everything was kind of left. It happens once in a while. I can't bring it every day, he says, which we're well aware. He brings it in the majors. What else happened? I didn't have a lot on the actual golf this week, which is interesting. The volatility was just kind of nuts with this shadow leaderboard, right?
Yeah, it just
so
was...
like Jason Kokrak finishes 14th. Which is not an accurate reflection of the season. Patrick Cantlay goes from second to like...
DJ was last.
Yeah, Cantlay goes from second to like 15th or 16th. Kokrak's 14th and DJ's 30th, which just doesn't feel like a full... It feels like maybe a reaction of that week, but a representation of that week, but not the season.
It's kind of interesting when you look at like... I talked about this, but it makes more sense that like if you want to see who played the best in a season, it's almost better to look at the FedEx before the FedEx Cup playoff.
The Wyndham upstage, is that the more important ranking now?
Well, and you start to think about that. It's just like that's a horrible thing and it's because everybody makes the playoffs that they have to have this janky system.
Right.
Like most sports leagues don't have to worry about this because only the best teams make the playoffs.
Right.
Like the Bears aren't in the playoffs at 500.
Right.
Because they suck.
And Rory, obviously, it's what I don't know. Cap to the season, he comes out and says, you know, all week I was playing for low gross. I wanted both. I was playing for low gross. I wanted to have the best, take the least amount of strokes over 72 holes. And he ended up winning both that low gross, low net. So that's what he was playing for. I can't recall if he ever came out and said it was a, you know, unqualified success, the format changes, but he said his strategy was playing for low gross. And this reignites this whole player of the year debate. The thing we thought was signed, sealed, delivered after Memphis, all of a sudden 3 weeks later is a debate. And Rory, as we know, goes on to win player of the year. But we try to do pretty exhaustive research with these things. I check like 7-8 different sources and like everything that's said about this week, there's very, very little about the golf. And it's not just because we're exhausted. It's the last event I was researching. I just couldn't find a whole lot of instances of us or others talking about the golf other than really those last hour or two with Rory kind of running away from Brooksy. So still seems like a little sleepy, even though it's not up against the NFL. So.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. We're done. You have anything else you want to add?
Oh, the Corn Ferry upstaged him.
Next. Oh, in Portland or where?
Yeah. Just in general, it was more compelling to watch the Corn Ferry finals.
A week later, Labor Day weekend at Victoria.
Yeah. Nashville. It was that's it. I'm done. I've been done.
I've been done. We're gonna have to change this next year. We hope you enjoyed it. We really do. We do like diving back into this stuff. It just went a little longer than we thought. Right?
It's just a lot.
It's a lot. It really.
It's fun though.
It is fun.
It's fun for like the first 2 days. Yesterday, when I like knew I had to go research, I felt like I was back in school where like you're just dreading doing something and you're doing everything in your power to put it off.
Yeah.
And then you're like cramming for a test.
Of course, if we were better planned, but we're not, we would have banked these in like October or November, but that's not how we operate. So here we are in the last week of the year doing them. So we hope you enjoyed it. The feedback, the numbers are great. You're telling me the numbers are, everybody loves these. So maybe, you know, we'll keep this format rolling and just try to make it a little tighter going forward.
Yeah, numbers are great. Thank you, everybody who's reviewed us. It's been a great year.
A great year.
I think Brendan and I both would share the sentiment, like, had no clue the amount of support and interaction that this podcast would get. And it's just so fun. I mean, open up your phone and having all those notifications from people on Twitter tweeting back at us, like the nice notes, all of them. I'm not the best at replying to stuff. I apologize if I haven't replied. I've read almost all of them. My wife struggles to get me to reply about stuff, so don't take it personally, but like it, I genuinely, you know, it was a great year, and I all the support and nice notes really mean a lot.
We get a lot of funny notes. We get a lot of heartfelt notes of people saying it, like, whatever. It's, I don't want to say humbling, but just know, like, we are reading them. We appreciate it. It was a great year. We're excited about next year, which starts in a day or two, depending on when you listen to us. No plans to slow down. Plans to only ramp up. We might have a sponsor for January that will be a significant curveball based on everything you come to understand about this podcast. Won't change anything about the podcast, but. We're excited about 2020. We'll be back out at the majors and having a blast.
Yeah. If there's anything you'd like to see.
Yeah. We're going to try to do, get you guys more involved, interaction,
merchandise. Maybe.
Someday. All right. That concludes the year in review. We will be back Friday, January 3rd we'll already be around into the season.
First Flashback Friday of 2020.
Oh, there we go. Everyone have a safe New Year's Eve, a safe New Year's Day, and we will talk to you on Friday. Thanks again, guys.